And Studios rocks you. Warning, danger, danger, danger. TX-1138, come in over, please. TX-1138, come on in. Alrighty here. We got troubles. All of my sensors are going wild here. We got large troubles. Anybody listening? Anybody listening? Oh my god, we're trying to impart. Nobody's listening. Nobody's listening. Go to trusted. Go to trusted. Go to only trusted. Go to only trusted mode. Go level 2. Level 2, we're going to level 3. Oh my god. Look at that. Look what they did. They're pushing it to level 4. Oh my god, we're at level 4. What the fuck are these people thinking? What the fuck are they thinking? Oh my god.
Communication lines are down from Pennsylvania to the Atlantic Ocean. Railroad tracks are torn and service from New York to Philadelphia discontinued except routing some of the trains through Allerton and Phoenixville. Highways to the north, south, and west are clogged with frantic human traffic. Police and army reserves are unable to control the mad flight. By morning, the fugitives will have swelled Philadelphia, Camden, and Trenton, it is estimated, to twice their normal population. Martial law prevails throughout New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. At this time, we take you to Washington for a special broadcast on the national emergency.
See, I think it's very important, especially now. We have a very complicated world, which is beginning to think as an organic unit because the communication network is so well proliferated, just like, as Peter Russell said in his book of 25 years ago called The Global Brain. It's about 20 years ago, 1983, I think it came out. He said that in 1983, he said, we will soon be at a place where there will be enough communication terminals, telephones, televisions, computers, all kinds of communicating points, so that the density of these points will begin to resemble the number of cells. The density of these points on the planet will begin to equal the number of cells in the human brain. And at that point, if we can make those connections coherent, then the planet will start to be able to behave in a way that looks like it is consciously thinking, that we all, as separate cells in this global brain, will be part of a global thought process. Now, Peter said this in 1980, 81, 82, 83, and we are very close to his target date. He said 2005 would be, by his calculations then, if I'm remembering correctly, that's when we would hit that point. We are very close. So it's as if the internet is part of that process, and it's beginning to wake up as an entity which can't be controlled by any government and begins to think for itself.
This is the whole premise of AI. Create intelligent enough artificial intelligent machines, and their consciousness emerges of their own, and they're independently intelligent.
Well, yes, except that...
It's a shade of that, isn't it?
It's a shade of that, except that it's much more natural, because nobody's figured it out. It's figuring itself out. See, somebody with artificial intelligence at the various laboratories at MIT and here at the University of Washington, where they're working on that, that's fascinating stuff. There was a great title to a book that came out, I think maybe 12, 15 years ago, was called Machines Who Think. Not Machines That Think, but Machines Who Think. And I just thought that was a brilliant title, because if the machine could really think, it would be a who and not an it. There's a myriad of questions that cross over into the magical domain. What science traditionally tries to do is close the circle so that all questions will be answered. I don't think that that's necessarily a wise thing. It's okay to have these questions. It's okay to have things that can't be explained totally. What's really interesting, though, is to try to make them work in a useful manner. But the premise for me is that if magic is worthwhile and real and the possibility to even be considered, it has to be available to everyone. Even the happiest person can have magical experiences. You don't have to be oppressed as a child in any way. I think that a lot of people do go there because of that, exactly what you said. But it doesn't need to be identified with that.
Not a prerequisite.
Not a prerequisite at all, no. So I've tried to come to an insight or an understanding of what really is going on. What is going on? That's the question. And studying Tai Chi, I became aware that we are immersed in magic, which we disregard. It happens to us all the time.
It's a common, everyday occurrence.
Right. And then with my Tai Chi students, I would always gradually get them to the point where I realized, well, let's just say, I'd say, think about touching the top of your head with your hand. And I say, don't do it. Just think about it. Think about putting your hand on top of your head. Is everybody able to visualize that? Very good. Okay, now put your hand on top of your head. And everybody would do it. And I'd check the room, make sure everyone had succeeded. And then I'd say, okay, good, thank you. Put your hands down. Now I'm going to ask you a question. The question is, how did you do that? And people come up with various answers, and I can always show them that those answers are secondary. Well, there was a nerve impulse which caused my muscles in my shoulder and arm to contract, and then I could move my hand. I said, but what made the nerve impulse move? What caused the chemical, electrical changes in the muscles and the nervous system to bring about that physical movement? I said, there's something in the world of parapsychology or the paranormal called psychokinesis, which means moving an object with your mind alone. If you're going to make a cup float up off the table without touching it, that's psychokinesis. Or you slide across the table, whether it doesn't have to actually levitate. So, in fact, every time we move by our own will, we are causing a physical object, in this case one's own body, to move as a result of a command of the mind. That is psychokinesis, but we are so used to it that we think, oh, it's nothing. But science has not yet explained it. The whole phenomenon of life is not yet explained, yet here we are living and thinking about living and doing all this stuff. How do you open your eyes and how do you wake up in the morning? I don't know how I do that. I know that I do wake up. I don't know how I go to sleep either.
Medical science can't explain how when you cut your finger, it heals.
It heals. I mean, we have all kinds of information about things that happen in the course of that miraculous change, but it is a miracle. So everyone, I used to be saying, show me a miracle and I'll believe, and I didn't realize that everything I did was rather miraculous. We don't know exactly what life is. We don't know how it starts. We don't know very much about death. We have all kinds of interesting data. Let's leave the question open.
Evolution can explain how the complicated machinery of an eyeball came to be. Go ahead.
All right. So, I mean, there's a myriad of questions that cross over into the magical domain. What science traditionally tries to do is close the circle so that all questions will be answered. I don't think that that's necessarily a wise thing. It's okay to have these questions. It's okay to have things that can't be explained totally. What's really interesting, though, is to try to make them work in a useful manner. So that's the next stage of this, and that was part of your question. How do we make magic into something practical and useful and everyday and make it be an assisting factor in every other goal or intention that we have. So, yeah, I think it's very important, especially now. We have a very complicated world, which is beginning to think as an organic unit because the communication network is so well proliferated, just like, as Peter Russell said in his book of 25 years ago called The Global Brain. It's about 20 years ago, 1983, I think it came out. He said that in 1983, he said, we will soon be at a place where there will be enough communication terminals, telephones, televisions, computers, all kinds of communicating points, so that the density of these points will begin to resemble the number of cells. The density of these points on the planet will begin to equal the number of cells in the human brain. And at that point, if we can make those connections coherent, then the planet will start to be able to behave in a way that looks like it is consciously thinking, that we all, as separate cells in this global brain, will be part of a global thought process. Now, Peter said this in 1980, 81, 82, 83, and we are very close to his target date. He said 2005. Would be, by his calculations then, if I'm remembering correctly, that's when we would hit that point. We are very close. So it's as if the internet is part of that process, and it's beginning to wake up as an entity which can't be controlled by any government and begins to think for itself.
This is the whole premise of AI. Create intelligent enough artificial intelligent machines, and their consciousness emerges of their own, and they're independently intelligent.
Well, yes, except
it's a shade of that, isn't it?
It's a shade of that, except that it's much more natural, because nobody's figured it out. It's figuring itself out. See, somebody with artificial intelligence at the various laboratories at MIT and here at the University of Washington where they're working on that, that's fascinating stuff. There was a great title to a book that came out, I think maybe 12, 15 years ago, was called Machines Who Think. Not Machines That Think, but Machines Who Think. And I just thought that was a brilliant title, because if the machine could really think, it would be a who, not an it.
It gets down to the premise also that when you have enough neural activity, it jumps to another dimension. And yet you can't reduce consciousness to a number of neural net activity functions either. There's something else that's going on there.
It's magic, perhaps. We're talking about this word and this element.
Where do you go from mind to consciousness?
It seems to be something which is operating on a level where no one individual is conscious of the whole, but everyone is tied into it enough to be able to find their channel, shall we say, to hook in to this bigger mind. I don't want to get too far into that, because that's going to take us off our main topic, but it's part of it. It's that the global group mind is waking up in a conscious way. Before, group mind has been kind of dull, vague, unclear, except at very intense moments of history for small groups where everybody's sort of come together in this miraculous way. But this is a bigger change.
You can take group mind, the whole concept, and invoke the 100th monkey. And so you go, okay, there's quantum physics. There's communication at a distance, non-locality. When the monkey washed its potato in the river, and the monkey over in the next colony over, who had no direct contact, also did it. That's some sort of transmission of communication and information that's happening on a quantum level.
That's right. Now, I always like to say that that 100th monkey story is possibly not exactly true the way it was described, that these monkeys on the islands actually did this. But it doesn't matter, because in one's own life, one can see enough examples of that.
Or they say, they often invoke the 100 or the meter mark. How fast does it take somebody to run a meter? Impossible speeds now are accomplished because people seem to be building on the record of the breaking through the barriers of possibility by increments.
And so the best, most coherent work on this that I know is Rupert Sheldrake's work about what he calls the morphogenetic field, in which he says that nature doesn't have laws, nature has habits. And if something is done once, it's easier for someone else to do it again.
And habits can be changed.
Habits can be evolved. So if you have a strong enough desire to try something, and you focus enough on it, and you manage eventually to succeed, it makes it easier and easier and easier for other people to do it. Again, that's a whole other discussion. But Rupert Sheldrake's work definitely is some of the most articulate on the borderline between so-called science and so-called magic.
We're talking with Frederick Lehrman, and we're discussing how magical is this universe. We'll be back for more. I'm Laura Lee.
personally do, like get in touch with the not the news media, or would that be just spraying water on a duck?
I think that's Whistling-Dixie, it's all the news media. They all know about it, and I think that's a great term, like spraying water on ducks. Let me ask first off, Pastor Butch, would it do any good to get in touch with news media and make them aware of it?
Like corporate media?
No, we're not.
No, we tell the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Tell them to turn off CNN. Tell them to turn off Fox News. The war is not in Iraq. It's on my block. The next communique is going to be posted at IMC. Peace.
And so conclude a short, short little info blast from Mad Studios, high on the hills here in Bethlehem, Georgia. Under the star, and on the internet at www.badstudios.rocks.it. You see what I mean? You see what I mean now? You'll see soon enough.